This week on Hyperspace Broadcast, the Star Force, including Derek Wildstar, heads out on a great adventure in Star Blazers. Star. Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Hyperspace Broadcast, a show where two real friends dig through Toonami's back catalog and try to determine what, if anything, is worth revisiting. I'm Michael Doak.
I'm Peter Eby.
And this week we're covering a handful of episodes of the 1979 anime adaptation Star Blazers. Star Blazers is, of course, an adaptation of the seminal series Space Battleship Yamato. And Space Battleship Yamato was created by Yoshinobu Nishizaki and aired in 1974. It's a super influential anime. Like,
oh yeah,
several works that we've covered before were very directly, and after watching the show, very obviously inspired by it, like Macross / Robotech or Mobile Suit Gundam.
Definitely Macross too. And this didn't air on Toonami. Right?
No, it was on Toonami Reactor, which was like a web-based browser thing. Yeah, it seems that way. I have to imagine that you had to download the episodes because this is like 2001
right.
era internet. And I can't imagine trying to stream on 2001 era internet considering how temperamental my internet now about 20 years later is.
Yeah, really.
Toonami Reactor was pretty interesting, and I definitely never actually used Reactor as a kid. I know at that time I would be surprised if we didn't still have dial-up, to be perfectly honest.
Oh yeah, I definitely just still had dial-up, if not maybe like just got a cable modem, but
right.
I think I looked at that and I was like, there's no way. Like, I remember seeing ads for it.
Actually,
like, yeah, right.
I think I do have like a very vague memory. I don't know if it was Reactor or maybe
Jetstream.
Yeah, Jetstream was the follow up. But I do vaguely remember trying to go online and play some kind of CartoonNetwork.com based like game, and it just not working at all. But
there's always like the infiltrator event, like there's like the that stuff that they had games for too, where it's like, oh, you gotta choose, play these games.
And yeah, then, the like, intruder I think you're thinking
yeah.
of. Yeah, help Tom fight off the goop or whatever.
Total immersion events, that's what they're called.
Yes, right.
Yeah, wow. help Tom fight goop and become Tom 2 and, I don't know, pick our new engines, I guess.
Yeah, maybe it was that, I don't know. I have vague memories of going online at some point, it being related to Cartoon Network in some capacity, probably Toonami, because let's be real.
Yeah.
And it just not functioned at all. But
You weren't playing like a cow and chicken game or some shit?
I don't know, I mean, I might have. I really loved cow and chicken, but that's neither here nor there. We should probably actually talk about Star Blazers. So Star Blazers was picked up as a potential kids entertainment program by the Westchester Corporation, and the first two series of Space Battleship Yamato, that's Space Battleship Yamato 1 and Space Battleship 2, were dubbed and released as Seasons 1 and 2 of Star Blazers in 1979. So changes were obviously made to make it more kid-friendly, but it's kind of worth noting that it still maintains a lot of the original works, like themes and atmosphere.
Yeah.
And the story isn't really changed all that much, unlike, say, Battle of the Planets. This is a pretty faithful adaptation, although, of course, they cut out like sexual references, cursing, violence,
alcohol.
Alcohol
is, in fact, referred to now as spring water.
Yes. And
when it appears, like, oh, you and me, we're gonna have a bottle of spring water.
Yeah, from the spring near my home in celebration of us both being sad sacks.
What a boring celebration.
Yeah, that doesn't sound great. But I think probably one of the major things is reducing references to World War II. You might notice,
sure,
the original show is called Space Battleship Yamato, And the Yamato, of course, was a real Japanese battleship used in World War II that is salvaged in the show and made into a spaceship somehow. The single biggest cut that's pretty well known is that the original episode 2 features a flashback to the actual Yamato being sunk. And this, of course, is cut entirely from the Star Blazers version of the show.
Yeah.
And what's kind of weird is that the third space battleship Yamato series wasn't actually made when this was licensed. So the third season of this is dubbed with an entirely different voice cast and was released like significantly later than everything else, which I suspect leads to some of the problems that we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
Also, there were movies in the Space Battleship Yamato series that take place between the second and third series, which were not dubbed. So that probably doesn't help either. And basically, this doesn't seem to have been actually aired. A few test episodes were aired. Yes. But overall, it doesn't seem to have been aired because if you watch any episode of season 3, it still is the season 2 opening.
Yeah, yeah, the season 2 opening. The opening, let's talk about real quick, is like
yeah, we really have
a naval sing-song kind of thing where, like, you know, we're all singing, like, what's happening and why yeah, we're flying
off. It's like
off.
A college football fight song
about
the launch
right.
of this spaceship. The tune of it's also obnoxiously catchy. Like, I've had it stuck in my head for the last several days. Which is kind of annoying.
Our Star Blazers.
Exactly, yes.
Yeah. It's also worth noting that they do refer to the ship as the Yamato early on, as like, oh, that's what we're excavating, and it's from this old war before we all reunited to fight the alien menace. And which I thought was kind of neat. They could have just completely changed it. Instead, they're like, oh, so we've resurrected the Yamato and we're going to change its name to Argo, as in like a Jason and the Argonauts reference, which, yeah, I think it works.
Yeah, it does. Actually, that is a fairly decent change. Like,
yeah.
It makes sense if you're rebuilding a ship to rename it something else. Argonauts thing works, given that they're on a great journey rather than a war necessarily.
In Japan, like, Yamato has like a lot more, you know, that has a lot of connotations that we completely miss out on. But like, Argo gives it some similar kind of connotations, sort of. Like, in Japan, it's more of a nationalistic kind of like mythical connotation. And here it's more mythical. Yeah, you know.
No, I think it's a decent change for localization anyway. So this is not the first anime to receive a dubbed release in the US by any stretch. I mean, Battle of the Planets and Speed Racer both preceded it. We've talked about both of them, but it was pretty notable in that it is one of the first series that has like a continuous overarching plot line that you kind of have to see in order to actually follow.
Yeah.
And that was pretty groundbreaking, especially in American like cartoons in the late 70s. I mean, when you're competing with Hanna-Barbera, Scooby-Doo kind of stuff, this is extremely different.
Episode a day. There's no like overarching plot line to goddamn anything in Hanna-Barbera that I can think of.
Yeah, of course not. So this is super groundbreaking and very memorable as a result of that.
Just check out the comments of any YouTube video of this, and it's like, I'm 50 and I used to watch this show. Like,
yeah,
so
pretty
many
much
comments
all
like
of
that.
Them. I'm
Which
50
I respect,
and I
like
used to get fucking stoned as hell and watch this show when I was a teenager.
Yeah. And you know what? Fair enough, because this show, like, you can tell that it would be groundbreaking, especially for that era. Like, good lord, because it's like, it's fairly decent too. Watching it now, and it's like, this is something that I would have been into as a kid if I had a chance to see
it. Oh sure, and yeah.
If I was in the 70s and saw this shit, it predated Star Wars, and there's like so much stuff in there that like hits that kind of same thing.
Yeah.
For
I mean, in fairness, it did not predate Star Wars in the U.S. Star Wars was 1977. Okay. This was 1979. But
right. It's 74 still. In Japan. It predates Star Wars.
Yeah,
okay.
Right.
But still, that perfect though. Even better. Like, I've seen Star Wars. Now I get this whole TV show of it. That's like
pretty much
kind of thing.
That's a similar kind of epic science fiction space opera thing. Yeah, it's a. I'm sure it would have been. I'm sure
that
Dragon
Ball
Z
of its day. In that, you know, Dragon Ball Z was a show that was so violent that it broke traditions of like anything else you could see on TV, and same with Gundam Wing. It's what made Toonami unique, and this is kind of the same thing, in that less so about the violence, but more about how serious it is. You know, characters die, and there's an ongoing story and stuff.
Right. Well, let's talk about that story.
Yeah.
We begin on Earth, of course, and the backstory is that it's been besieged by these aliens called Gamelons, who have used quote-unquote planet bombs to irradiate Earth's surface, and humanity is now forced to live underground. Any shot of Earth from space is, you know, just a giant desert where you can, like, kind of see the outlines of the continents as, like, raised up areas in that desert. And even though humanity has been forced underground, the Gamelons continue attacking. Within a year, humanity will be totally wiped out. It'll be too irradiated to live. So, the last battleship from Earth's space fleet, under the command of Captain Avatar, fights against a Gamelon fleet near Pluto, where an unidentified ship flies through the middle of the battle. During the battle, another ship captain named Alex Wildstar sacrifices his ship and crew in order to give Avatar time to escape, despite the fact that Avatar is like, no, you gotta come with us, and, you know, Alex Wildstar is like, I gotta save you, and dies, as you do in these kinds of shows.
Yeah. Of course.
The unidentified ship crash lands on Mars, and its pilot is found dead by Derek Wildstar, Alex Wildstar's younger brother, and a character named Mark Venture. They also find a message capsule in the ship.
And the message is from this far-flung planet called Iskandar, where this woman was delivering this message that's just like, oh, hey, we have the ultimate secret to curing your planet of its awful radiation, and you have only a year, as we will hear many more times, you have only a year's time to come over here and get it. And also, we have this like super drive technology, so you can make like a really cool spaceship,
the wave motion drive.
Yeah, and we have the Cosmo DNA, which for some reason we cannot bring to you, even though we can bring you the cool drive.
I don't know, it's I mean, okay, good
it's
point.
Fair enough.
Presumably, the Cosmo DNA is too difficult to transport. As as I was once told, the ice cream nachos from an ice cream delivery service in college were too crazy to be delivered. I had to go out to the remote location and grab them myself. Man, that place. Anyway, planet Iskandar is super far away, but now they have this faster-than-light travel courtesy of the plans that they're given. And Avatar forms the Star Force, who crew a spaceship made out of the wreck of the Japanese World War II battleship Yamato. It's renamed the Argo and launched into space. The goal is to get the Cosmo DNA from Iskandar to make Earth habitable again. Of course, the Gamelons are still out in space and actually are all around the solar system.
Including
a serious base on Pluto where they're launching all of these planet bombs.
But fortunately, the Argo just fucking kicks ass now.
Yes, the Argo, in addition to having the wave motion engine, they have the much more memorable wave motion gun, which is a laser cannon that can, like, blow the shit. The first time they fire it, they are astonished at how much more powerful it is than they expected it to be.
Yeah, it blows up a floating continent. Like a huge, like the size of a continent on Jupiter, and just completely wipes it out. And they're like, oh shit.
They're like, oh, we meant to blow up the base on that continent, not the entire fucking thing.
And it's interesting. There's always like, they're always talking about how it's like one last ship against like all of these different Gamelon,
ships the whole Gamelon fleet or the whole empire.
This whole fleet, and it's like these like stealth bomber looking weird jets on the Gamelon side, and it really, seeing them all like fan out in formation and attack this one ship, reminds me of just like every space shooter game, like every shoot 'em up where it's like you're the one ship left and you have to fight everything.
I can definitely see how those kinds of games took some inspiration from this. I know that it's mentioned on Wikipedia that some specific arcade shooter that I can't remember, unfortunately, took direct inspiration from this as well. That's season one, the quest to find Iskandar and bring back the Cosmo DNA. Season two begins a year after the end of the first season. Derek Wildstar is now acting captain of the Argo, and Earth comes into contact with another alien empire, this time the Comet Empire, who basically just want to destroy Earth entirely. Unlike the Gamelons, who I guess wanted to colonize it, the Common Empire just wants to wipe it out. They are led by Prince Zordar, and also the leader of the Gamelons, who at this point are scattered due to the events of last season. Leader Deathlok is allied with Zordar, and, you know, he's gathering his true believers to get revenge on the Star Force and the Yamato slash Argo.
Deathlok's pretty great, too, because, like, it follows the classic sci-fi trope of, like, all the villainous empire, they're all British.
Yes.
Like, they all, or in this case, they all have an accent. So, like,
they're all British. Well, the Gamelons are all
British. The Common Empire is all Russian.
Right.
And, the Gamelon Empire is all British, especially Leader Deathlok, who has a chant that the entire crew will say sometimes, where they just go, Deathlok, 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 Deathlok.
Yes, and they will just chant his name at him like they're a bunch of Pokemon. It's very strange but hilarious. Also, I gotta say, Deathlok is like such a great archetypical like shithead villain in that anytime the show cuts to him in these first I guess we never really talked about how many episodes we watched, but we watched 8 of the first season and then 3 each of season 2 and 3. Mm-hmm. But in those first 8 episodes, anytime it cuts to Deathlok, he's either like drinking from a goblet of wine or surrounded by women, or in my personal favorite, they cut to him and he's literally just like looking at himself in a mirror.
He's great, dude. Yeah.
And there is no better way to introduce a villain to me than to be like, you know, just to make you think, what an asshole, than to introduce him just looking at himself in a full like room mirror, like, I look pretty good.
Well, and dude, the first time you hear from him, he's communicating to a ship, and the communicator is a statue of his face where his eyes light up when he's talking through it.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
It's fucking so good.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Deathlok's what a vain awesome.
Deathlok is the best character. So, you know, Wildstar has to regather the crew of the Argo in season 2 to stop the Comet Empire, even though those meddling bureaucrats in government, rather, fails to see the incredibly obvious threat that's approaching.
So annoyingly obvious. Like, oh, we were attacked and we've had a series of blackouts, and also we're having all this crazy interference.
Probably
and
nothing.
Also, again, we were attacked by mysterious forces in the outside of the galaxy.
Yeah,
it's probably like, fine.
Yeah, we were attacked by enemy ships that are unidentified, and our power stations on various planets were destroyed. Probably not a problem.
It's like, not a problem.
Come
Look,
on,
I'm trying
guys.
To win an election.
Yeah, like, right.
That's okay.
So surprisingly like realistic in some ways, maybe, but also the frustrating, like, the military mavericks have to take control because that dumb government doesn't know what it's doing.
And also, like, it is, like, sure, like, I'm sure stuff like that can happen, but also it's not presented in a way that makes any sense. It's just like,
true.
It's just like someone making that argument as if, like, a child was like, man, oh, just, they're boring, but the military's cool. You know?
Yeah, it is that kind of thing, certainly. So season 3 features a battle between the Galman Empire, which is a reformed Gamelon Empire, and the Bolar Empire, and I believe their home planet of birth, and I'm not, like, that's actually what it's called.
Yeah, which leads me to believe that they have, like, a Boopiter, like a Bluto.
Yeah, right, Popeye, Olive Oil, I'm guessing those are Blatter. Other planets in their system. But this during this battle, the Galman Empire fires a series of planet destroying missiles, and two of them, I guess, miss entirely. One of them detonates in Earth's sun, and this causes a chain reaction. So Earth once again only has a year to live before the sun fucking explodes.
Yeah.
And in this case, Wildstar, who is now the full-on commander of the Argo, has to go out and find a new home for humanity out in the reaches of space while, you know, presumably dealing with the kind of random aftershocks of this battle that doesn't involve them at all.
Yeah.
And seems to be happening very far away. Like, I don't understand. how this works exactly, but you know what? Whatever. Yeah, fine. The
bowler system, dude. It's yeah. Always.
Oh, God. I didn't even think about that. Yeah, it's the bowler empire rather than the solar empire.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, exactly. That's why it's birth.
Holy shit. All right.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. So those are the three seasons. Obviously, we didn't watch all of it, but I think we got a decent, you know, grab bag of.
Yeah.
You know, we got a good idea of what the show is, hopefully. So let's move on to our Zeniths and Nadirs. These are notable episodes that are either pretty good or really bad.
Yeah.
Peter, what was your favorite episode?
My favorite episode was season one, episode seven, The Reflex Gun, part one. I really liked this episode because this is like the first time that they are actually in trouble. Like, it really, like, when the Yamato gets launched and it starts going through the solar system and they start encountering all the bad guys, like, they pretty much just stomp them handedly over and over again. And it's kind of like, well, okay, like, I get we have one ship left. I guess we have, like, the best ship ever.
Yeah, but it does get pretty formulaic in that pretty much every episode boils down to, gotta land somewhere, oh no, enemies, blow them up, repeat.
Yeah, and, like, it's rarely an issue. But in this episode, they stop by Pluto, and they're like, okay, if we stop by Pluto, we can blow up the planet bomb base and, you know, probably give Earth some extra time. And so they fly by there, but then the turns out the Gamelons have this, their own fucking super laser gun. Guess what? It's called the Reflex Gun, and it's like got a shorter range but is more powerful, supposedly. Except it's not more powerful, because if it was, it would blow up a continent and surely blow up the ship.
That's true. But the powerful thing about it is that it can fire and like reflect off of orbiting mirrors. So it doesn't really have, like, once you're in range, there are no blind spots, basically.
Yeah, if you're on Pluto anywhere, you're fucked. And it's pretty cool because, like, you watch it and it's like this whole episode they're just completely screwed. Like, they keep getting hit by this giant laser and they're like, all right, we're gonna go hide under the water, and it's like, no, you're not.
Yeah, right. They try to hide behind Pluto's moon, and they just bounce the beam around.
And it just kind of had, like, this kind of had, like, more of an exciting, more kind of exciting action. Like, the show in general seems to have, like, slower ship-to-ship combat, which I kind of like. It's something I haven't really seen in shows, like, actual, like, naval space combat kind of thing.
Yeah, right. I'll talk about this in more detail later, but one of the things that's interesting about this show certainly is, like, there is, like, a checklist of procedures to go through for seemingly every action.
Yeah.
And it makes it feel quite real in a way.
Yeah, and it's, and one thing that's also worth noting is this show is a lot of, like, decent detail in the animation that is surprising, because it often looks better than later shows like Mobile Suit Gundam and
Robotech
or Macross. They have a lot of some cool little details in this episode. They, like, launch missiles to blow up the enemy's huge menace missiles that are coming at them. And then they have to use, like, plasma guns to pick up, like, to poke holes in any of the missiles that didn't get blown up and, like, just barely survive an attack from that. They fire a rocket anchor, which is stupid, but also
but
awesome.
But awesome, yeah. And, like, swing around Pluto's moon.
Yeah, a rocket anchor that puts itself into Pluto's moon so they can, like, swing around it. It doesn't make any sense gravitationally, I'm sure.
Well, and also, like, the chain would have to be unbelievably strong to be able to take that kind of, like, torque.
Yeah, right.
It's ridiculous, but it's awesome.
And, like, you think they've just when you think they're, like, getting out of the way and they're like, okay, they're going to be safe now, they're hit fucking again, because, like, the array of satellites is just endless. Like, and so it ends with, like, them capsizing, going underwater, and it's like, oh, I guess they're dead. And, like, of course they aren't, yeah. But it's pretty awesome. Like, I was really happy to have, like, an episode that seemed so dramatic and also had, like, little cool details in the in, like, the gunfire and all the different procedures and, like, trying to fucking save themselves. What was your favorite episode?
Mine was The Reflex Gun Part 2. That's Season 1, Episode 8, and obviously follows on from your episode directly. So this episode is notable for me in that it features like Wildstar leading kind of an away mission, to use Star Trek parlance, to destroy the reflex gun at its base while the Argo is hiding underwater. But there's a variety of like different little things that they have to do. I think one of the strengths of the show is having the main characters have to figure out basically on the fly strategies to deal with problems they're facing. So like the Argo is sunk, but they're like, ah, we can just stay underwater and they can't shoot us because they can't see us. The Gamelons launch submarines, which destroy, I think, their oxygen reactor or some shit. So they can't stay submerged permanently. So they have to, like, watch the mirrors to see where the laser is pointed and then surface and immediately duck back underwater so they don't get hit. And then this also is signaling their, like, ground unit to where the reflex gun actually is, so that they can go find it and blow it up. And that's just really cool. I don't know. I feel don't see a lot of that kind of strategizing in even later shows. So I don't know. I like this one quite a bit.
And the whole like land, sea, and air aspect of it's pretty cool too. Like this is a battle that's going on in multiple fronts.
The last thing to say about this, too, is that it's more from your favorite episode, but the reflex gun is pretty cool in that it's actually located underwater, which is, you know, because it's on Pluto, like, covered in ice.
Yeah.
So when it fires, it has this really cool animation of the laser blasting out and, like, melting a hole in the ice as it fires, and then the ice refreezing over the area after it's done. I don't know. I just think that's a cool detail.
It's really a cool place to hide a super laser too. Like I didn't expect it at all. Right. And then it was like, oh shit, that's where it is. That's awesome.
Yeah. Also, this is the episode that features Deathlok looking at himself in a mirror. So, you know,
you know, it's good. Now in the inverse of that, we have My Nadir, season 2, episode 3. So this is kind of like, this is like really where it gets fucking annoying in season 2, where like we're 3 episodes in, there's no launch, we have ample evidence that that there are aliens attacking, that they're about to get fucked up by the Common Empire,
and that they're being ignored apparently completely.
And it's just like, and this is the episode where like Derek has to go before the Defense Council and like try and convince them that they're being attacked, and for some reason they don't listen to the guy who came back leading, like commanding the ship that saved Earth before.
Okay, we don't like, necessarily know that.
I suppose not, but
it's been a year, and I did watch a couple more episodes of this actually after we stopped, and Captain Avatar is sick from radiation poisoning in the first season. Which isn't revealed for a few more episodes, but I guess I don't know for sure that Wildstar is the commander of the Argo that like came back and saved everyone necessarily.
Oh, okay, like at the time, like right now. He's acting commander, but even so, like this is he's got to be something of a higher up on this ship that came back. He's definitely had some heroic accolades. You should probably fucking pay attention to him even a little bit. But they don't even let him, like, sit in on the meeting. They're just like... they only let him sit in on the meeting. He's not a part of it. And so when he's like, no, like, dude, they're actually attacking us, they're just like, shut up. Like, and it's just... like, it's supposed to be annoying, yeah, but it's, like, pretty stupid that with so much evidence and they've been attacked, and I'm pretty sure they're aware of that. Maybe they aren't. Maybe it's so far away that they don't know
I'm not entirely sure.
Scout ship got blown up, but it's still just like, oh, come on. Can we get on with this? Like,
It's also worth mentioning that in season 2, Chris Latta voices a character who's like a captain who doesn't like Wildstar. And Chris Latta is one of my favorite voice actors as you know, Starscream and Cobra Commander of Transformers and G.I. Joe. But he feels underused here in that he is not nearly at his screechiest. And that is where he is best.
That's true. That's true. He should have been one of like the villain's lackeys, which I guess is what he always is.
Or the main villain. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Cobra Commander is the main villain, sort of.
What was your least favorite episode?
My least favorite episode was season 3, episode 3. Now, as we've said, season 3 felt like a bit of a mess to us, and this episode is kind of just representative of that, in that the problem that I have with season 3 is that in the first several episodes, it feels like there's just incident upon incident, but all of it's resolved very quickly, and then the show just kind of moves on to something else. Like, in things that seem like they would be the plot of an entire episode. And this is a good example, because in this episode, a Galman ship accidentally warps to Earth and is, like, in danger of finding the Argo. That seems like a plot.
Yeah.
Like, that seems like an episode. Oh, shit, we're now directly involved in this war. The ship is blown up in less than a minute by a bunch of fighters.
Yeah, it's just, like, so easy.
And then it's over.
It's like, and, oh, okay.
Yeah, it's like, all right, well, I guess that's not what this episode is about. Back to waiting for the Argo to take off, which it still hasn't.
Yeah, they are, like, ready to launch the Argo by the end of the first episode of the season. And then, like, the second episode, they don't do it. In the third episode, they're like, we got to do it. And then it's like, wait a minute, this guy doesn't want to go on the mission because he met a girl at an airport that he talked to for a couple seconds, never learned her name, and he's in love.
Yes. One of the bridge crew...
We gotta go find her. Like, why?
One of the bridge crew from the first season, Homer, has met a girl at an airport after being called to the Argo,
and they talked...
Yes. They talked for 12 seconds, and he decided he was in love with her, even though he doesn't know her name or where she's from or anything. So he is like, I can't go on the Argo for this year-long mission because this girl. So he runs off, and everyone's like, oh, no, that's horrible. Not Homer, my favorite character. And then, hilariously, she just shows up on the Argo.
Yeah.
Because I guess she's the granddaughter of, like, the big general guy. So now she's on the Argo, but Homer isn't. So they have to go find Homer. And I'm certain that they literally dispatch people to, like, find him in aircraft.
They do.
Then it turns out he's just hanging out on the deck of the Argo.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, you should meet this girl who is the girl that you met.
And then they meet and separate. And that's it. And they're like, all right, I guess we're going to launch. Like, they meet and it's like, that was nice. I hope you come back. Oh, I hope you do too.
Oh, I'll definitely come back for you, girl I've talked to for maybe a combined total of 1 hour.
Yeah. Yeah. It sounds very like World War II love, though. Like, it reminds me of like when you hear love stories where it's like, oh yeah, I fell in love with this girl that like I met for 3 minutes.
Yeah, I don't know. It feels silly in retrospect. And it really, for me, the problem is just that these two things are not like happening concurrently. It's like two separate plots crammed into one episode, and it's not like an A and B plot. It's like a plot for half one and a plot for half like two, and then a plot for the very last third of the second half, where it's like, all right, I guess we're finally gonna launch.
And you know,
and it's just
maybe
boring.
Maybe it's just like, you know, when we would suffer through these extremely long sagas of DBZ, and then you would get like those one or two episodes where everything's peaceful before another saga happens and more evil guys
sure,
come.
Yeah.
Maybe it's like that. Like, maybe they were having like, they're like, you know what? We got 3 episodes. Let's just chill for a moment. We're going to have some bad guys starting to show up, but mostly we're going to have characters just kind of relaxing, I guess.
Yeah. Season 3, generally speaking, seems pretty bad based on the 3 episodes that we watched. But
yeah,
we got to get to our break. When we get back, we will talk about what we thought about this, grab bag of episodes overall, and then give our recommendation and talk about what we will be watching next.
Magnificent! All ships advance. Destination Talazar.
Star Blazers will return in a moment. Hey there, everyone. This is Michael with a voice that is
sick, in case you hadn't noticed. Here to give you some information that you may have already figured out, or intuited, or maybe you don't know it, and this is actually a useful segment, and you're not just going to ride that skip button. Our opening and closing music is, as always, Vapor Diving, and the music for the bumpers is Monkeys. Both of these tracks are by Anitek, that is A-N-I-T-E-K. You can find more of their music on SoundCloud. Rights were secured through Jamendo. Our next full episode will release January 1st, and tune in next week for Crest of the Stars. As always, you can submit a topic or show suggestion for our minisodes via DM on facebook.com/HBpod, Twitter @HBpod, or you can email us at hyperspacebroadcastpod@gmail.com.
This is the Earth Flagship 225. Our answer, idiots. Over.
And now, back to Star Blazers.
And we're back. This show, huh? Star Blazers.
Right. Yeah. What did you think about it, Peter?
You know, I liked watching it. It was available on YouTube. Whether that was legal or not is, I don't know, up to the copyright holder.
Definitely but, not.
But who the hell even owns the copyright? But you know, it was up there, and it was pretty enjoyable to watch. Like it's cool seeing this historically. It was honestly as cheesy as it is seeing all the comments being like, "I'm 50 and I love this show." Like it's kind of cool seeing that and being like, hey, I'm kind of inside something cool and secret and nerdy that no one likes or knows except old people.
And it also kind of gives me hope that in, you know, 30 years, assuming that society hasn't collapsed, I'll be the one who's like, oh, I used to watch Gundam Wing when I was like just out of, you know, elementary school. This show's great. It's so nostalgic to look at it again.
Yeah. And, you know, it's. Yeah, and there's something nice about it. Like, and the show itself is pretty enjoyable. Like, it's an easy watch. It's just like it's a show you can just put on, and it's not like egregiously poorly dubbed or anything. Like,
yeah, the dub has some serious goofiness. There's a character with the most ridiculous Southern accent, like like stereotypical hick accent ever.
That's
who I love.
Yeah, and he's like,
I believe
one of the
his
deck
name
guys.
Is Eager.
Yeah.
But it's
the glare's coming right for us, Captain. Like it's like
yeah,
that.
Right. That pretty much exactly.
Great.
And the dub is very strange in that I think it's the only dub I've ever seen where it seems like they did not try at all to match the lip flaps.
That's
like,
true.
People will just say lines when the character's mouth is clearly closed. It's very strange. But that aside, like, yeah, it actually holds up surprisingly well. Like,
yeah.
Animation wise, even it still looks pretty good, which is kind of crazy considering the show's from 1974.
It is impressive looking. And like, yeah, I would say outclasses Gundam in terms of how good the show looks, at least like scene to scene. Like there wasn't a bunch of like moments where I'm just like, oh, that looks really awkward. Like, you know?
Yeah, that's true. I mean,
I don't know anything about production.
I have a soft spot for Gundam, in fairness, but also, like, yes, there are definitely not shots where you see, like, the Yamato, and you're like, what the fuck happened here? Like, that doesn't look right at all.
Yeah. They do use a lot of stock footage.
Many times.
They do use a lot of stock footage, like, of it crossing, like, crossing through space, and you see, like, its entire hall,
right, of course.
Left to right. But, you know, every show does that.
Yeah. Yeah, I like this show. I was surprised at how much I liked it, to be honest.
Yeah.
I think season 2 and 3 leave something to be desired. But I think the strengths of the show are, as I mentioned before, the sort of slowness and procedure of pretty much anything they do. Like, that gives it a realistic feeling that I feel like is missing in a lot of similar shows or shows that are kind of a takeoff of it.
Yeah.
Another thing that I like, although it led to some boring episodes in season 1, I appreciate that from episode to episode, when the Yamato / Argo gets damaged, they actually have to repair it.
Oh, yeah,
and
that's right.
Usually this is, like, actually detailed. Like, they'll have animation of dudes, like, crawling around the outside of the ship, welding stuff back on.
Yeah.
Or, like, there's one episode where they need to dispatch little mining crews to get a Titanite to upgrade their broadswords in Dark Souls, or, you know, more accurately patch up the sides of the ship. And that's really cool. And, like, again, that gives it this kind of realism that's really lacking in other shows. Like, I wish that that was done in, like, Gundam more.
Yeah,
frankly.
Instead it's like the episode ends and then we just know they're going to be fine the beginning of next episode. Like, you just assume they repaired. But, like, seeing them actually go down and do it, that really does,
no,
like,
it's cool. And it like, leads to conflict, too, because, I mean, the whole two-part episode that was our favorite bit of this whole show, like, a lot of that is them trying to find time to repair.
Yeah, right.
Or trying to deal with the fact that they can't repair a critical system and, like, figuring out a creative solution. I like that kind of stuff a lot. I think that's really cool. I wish it was in more stuff.
Yeah, for sure. Even today.
Yeah, right. And in fairness, like, there are definitely some Gundam shows that kind of do that. Like, 8th MS Team is a decent example of a show where stuff being destroyed, you don't just have it back in full condition next episode.
but
that's cool stuff, and it's nice detail. On the other hand, the Argo is, as you mentioned, super powerful to a degree that, like, it seems invincible for a little while.
Yeah.
That's kind of annoying. I feel like most of the characters are pretty thin. I don't get a lot out of any of them beyond very basic stuff, with the exception of IQ9, because he's just kind of an asshole.
Yeah.
But even, like, that's not really a deep character.
And, like, the main character, Derek, I, like, can't think of anything about him that
Yeah, no, he's just kind of there. He's very, like, generic.
He's angry his brother died. Like, yeah, that sounds like a role-playing character I made up when I was in, like, sixth grade, dude.
Yeah, right. That, like, all of the characters are very archetypical, but it kind of works because this is such a, like, early version of this kind of show. So I guess we should get into our recommendations, which is, I'll go first, I think. Yeah. So our categories are a visit, which is a thing that you should see regardless of whether you've seen it, a revisit, which is something that probably isn't that highly recommended, but if you have seen it, it's not going to ruin your memory, or Best Left in the Past, which is a show that you really just shouldn't bother seeing at all because it's just going to waste your time and make you sad that you ever liked it.
Yeah.
I think that this show is, for me, a very conditional visit.
Yeah.
In that, it is so clearly a precursor to shows that I am a fan of, or shows that are, like, the roots of franchises that I really like. And so, looking at it from a historical perspective, it's really cool to see sort of the foundations of this genre being laid.
Yeah.
It also made me reevaluate Robotech/Macross. Quite a bit, because I feel like Macross is very clearly based on this show, and, like, so I'm willing to cut it a little slack on things like kind of boring characterizations, because it feels like these are the archetypes that are then built into more fleshed out characters like Rick Hunter / whatever his actual name is in Macross. And that's kind of cool. Like, I think Night of the Living Dead is a fucking masterpiece, and I know I'm really going out on a limb there to say that, but I can also understand why someone wouldn't like it, because it's so stereotypical by modern standards, because it is the thing that made the stereotypes. Yeah. This feels very much the same way to me.
Yeah, yeah, I can see that for sure. I agree. I would say a conditional visit. Like, I think this is something that's very interesting to watch, like, you pretty much covered all the bases here. Like, it's a historical value to watch. That's all right. It's like, and it's also just got, like, some cool designs and stuff. Like, I like the alien ship designs, and I feel like you can definitely draw lines between those designs and designs from shows in, like, Macross.
Yeah, like Gundam and Macross for sure.
Like, definitely, like, there's also a lot of design aesthetic borrowed. It's a really neat show, and, like, the naval combat aspect of it, I think, is awesome. That's so cool.
Yeah,
and
that's really cool.
I don't see that at all today. I haven't seen anything like it, and, like, that's something I want to see more of.
Yeah, so absolutely.
I think recommended if you're down for that kind of stuff. I think I would say check it out.
Yeah, and I will say, too, that it helps quite a bit that, by my standard anyway, it still looks pretty good.
Yeah.
Like, as you said, I think it is more consistently animated than Gundam
is,
for
that's,
example.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah. But anyway, so yeah, that's Star Blazers. Surprisingly enjoyable show. I kind of wish that it had aired on regular Toonami. I probably would have liked it if I'd been able to watch it.
Yeah.
But we got to move on. For Minisode next week, we're going to be watching Crest of the Stars.
Oh, yeah.
Which
you know what that
is
means.
Another...
It's the return of Anime Unleashed Unleashed. The only show ever where we'll talk about G4 Tech TV's classic anime program that only I watched called Anime Unleashed. And this is one of the shows they aired. I think the first one they aired was all of Crest of the Stars.
Yeah, and I will almost certainly during that episode call it Crest for the Stars at least once on accident.
Because the stars need to clean their teeth. They need some high quality.
Yeah, you see,
brought
I always...
Brought to you by Crest.
Like, yeah, of course. And then the week after that, we're going to be doing our holiday special. Now, we've been a little coy about what this is going to be, but we're actually going to come out and say it now.
Yeah.
We are going to be watching the Star Wars Holiday Special, the legendarily awful hour and a half long extravaganza of a bunch of Wookiees grunting at each other with no subtitles.
And coked out actors that you know and love.
Yes, and I am afraid to watch this, which is part of the reason that I'm just saying that we're doing it right now, so I don't like... figure out a way to back out of
we have to it's but, our,
you know,
our live action yearly tradition we're gonna throw something in there and
and it fits so perfectly. We're at the end of the Skywalker saga with Rise of Skywalker.
Surely it is nobody will be sick of hearing about Star Wars.
Yeah, sure. No, we gotta get that SEO, man.
Oh yeah,
gotta gotta get that stuff. But anyway, I am not excited to watch that, but we are going to do it and hopefully survive through. That episode will either be 40 minutes of us just like quietly mumbling nonsense at each other because we've been broken.
Yeah.
Or I don't know. I guess that's kind of what it always is, isn't it?
You know, to some extent, yeah. It'll be a good time. A bad good time, you know.
You know, so our kind of good time,
yes,
really.
Exactly.
So that will be fun. But until then, I'm Michael Doak.
And I'm Peter Eby.
And be sure to revisit us next week for Crest of the Stars.
Thanks so much for listening. If you want more of our content, follow us over at facebook.com/HBpod and Twitter @HBpod, where we post all of our episodes, as well as additional content related to what we've been watching. This is also a great way to get in contact with us if you are so inclined. Of course, subscribing on iTunes or Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or wherever you get your podcasts is also a surefire way to stay up to date. And while you're there, please consider leaving us a review. It really helps spread the word of the podcast. And, you know, we appreciate it quite a bit. Even the negative reviews, we just appreciate those slightly angrier. See you next week for Crest of the Stars. Until then, happy holidays.